Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Today I have a guest, or will have a guest in a few minutes, as soon as he gets himself in the right place. That is Tom Kaczynski, formerly the town manager of Jackman, Maine. Now he's America's town manager. Unfortunately, you know, the United States is a very big country, and we've got these four time zones on continental United States, plus I guess Alaska and Hawaii have add two or three more. Three more, I believe. And so it makes sometimes all this translation between Central Time and Eastern Time. The long and short of it is I told Mr. Kaczynski the wrong time to be on the show. But we will be getting him in about 10 minutes or so when he gets to the right place. In the meantime, I wanted to talk a little bit about what I was talking about on the American Awakening on Friday. Because on Friday, I taped my show, but I did live the American Awakening. I did that live, and a lot of you out there probably heard it. I don't want to be too repetitive. But I talked on that during the first 20 minutes in particular about the difficulty in discussing Jewish power. It's difficult for a number of reasons. One, because if you talk about it, you get in trouble. You could lose your job. You could be ostracized from your acquaintances. You can lose access to, I mean, like my show, we lost access to our credit card processor, for instance. You can get more or less thrown off the internet. There's all sorts of things. That's one reason. Another reason is because it's so repressed, that the speech is so repressed, it's difficult to formulate a narrative because no man is an island. And when I say man, I use it in the original sense of the word, which means human. The old English had a different word, were, which I guess is that where werewolf come from or werelock came from? But were was specified the male of mankind. But at any rate, no person, no man is an island. And by stifling discussion of Jewish power, you inhibit the development of a narrative of Jewish power, an explanation of Jewish power, one that that makes sense that to people, that is powerful, that's appealing. So that's another reason it's difficult to discuss. It's also difficult because there is so much sensitivity about it. We don't want, or most of us certainly, do not want to seem to be or literally be calling for, violence, for all sorts of unnecessary discord. We don't want to be calling for that. And so in order to avoid the appearance of calling for that, there's a tendency to go out of our way. And you get all sorts of alternative narratives, you get a whole variety. One, you know, it's not all Jews, it's just the leaders. It's not all Jews, it's just the Khazarians. Or they're not Jews, they're Khazarians. You get this type of thing. Jews are the real victims. There's actually some Illuminati or secret government or something that uses the Jews as maybe high high-priced slaves, you know, the highly paid slaves, but they're slaves and they're the real victims. You hear that. You hear all sorts of things. And I was making the case that, well, actually, you know, there's a group behavior, which I focus on. And, of course, the group behavior is primarily led and directed by an elite. That's true. And so the elite bears the brunt of the responsibility. But there is responsibility that is broader than that, because even non-elite Jews will, they act to repress discussion, to enforce the taboo on the discussion of Jewish power. This was something I was trying to bring to the table, something I was trying to talk about. I want to see if Mr. Kaczynski's ready. It's a little bit tough. I think my engineer, Mr. T, is out chasing squirrels, so it's a little bit difficult here. But he'll be joining us in just a couple of minutes. And it makes it very difficult to talk about. It makes it difficult to discuss. It means the narratives that do get out there haven't gone through the process of going back and forth between between various people. It hasn't been refined, and so you get coarse, unrefined narratives out there. You know, you get the memes of throw them in the ovens and stuff like that, and that's, nobody is talking about that. Nobody wants that. But if there is some responsibility, well, what's the response? And to me, the main thing is to be able to talk about Jewish power. And the main thing that I'm saying that Jews need to accept is that for decades now, as outlined in the culture of critique, they have subjected white society and white individuals to a barrage of criticism, of critiques of our society, of our psychology, of our family, of our values, of everything, our history, our heritage. And it's only reasonable that they should be willing to accept the same level of critique, that we should be able to critique what they have done. And we're not. And if we try, we're neo-Nazi white supremacists. And that's a problem. Let me see again if I can bring Mr. Kaczynski in now. Okay, Mr. T's back from chasing the squirrels. I hope they weren't too fast. And we will be bringing in Mr. Kaczynski in just a second. Tom, are you there? Okay, he will be with us in just a second. But, you know, this is the issue that we face. But it has some corollaries. There are some other related issues. Mr. Kaczynski, Tom, are you with me?
I am, but give me about another minute and a half. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I will go on a little bit with what I'm trying to shape up for the theme of the show, which I just started talking about Jewish power and how difficult it is to develop a narrative of Jewish power because of the repression of the discussion of Jewish power. It means that intellectuals have trouble conversing with each other and developing something. And there, you know, you get a lot of poor narratives that are developed because of the desire. You know, what are we going to do with all of these rank and file run of the mill Jews that aren't in leadership positions? How do we handle them? Do we call them the real victims, or do we just say, well, they have nothing to do with it? And I say, well, they have something to do with it in that they help enforce the taboo. But that's not a capital offense. That's not necessarily even a felony. But there is a certain amount of responsibility there. Now, Mr. Kaczynski, Tom, what I want to talk to you about, as we communicate a little bit before the show, is not so much talking about Jews, but even talking about whites positively is a difficult thing to do, as I'm sure you know, because you've borne the brunt of trying to speak positively about whites.
And yeah. This is exactly what you're talking about.
This is something we have to learn how to talk about whites. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me on, Patrick. I appreciate the opportunity as always, and I apologize for the slight delay in me coming online with you.
Well, that was my fault. I gave you the wrong time. I'm sorry about that. It's translating between Eastern time and Central time sometimes is a bit of a challenge.
Well, yeah, that's your fault for not knowing the world revolves around Eastern time. But, of course, that's okay. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, my friend. It's the question you bring up is a good one. And I just before I go into this, I just want to make sure you can hear me clearly. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's good enough.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And what I was going to say is that one of the big problems we have is that we've been boxed out of being able to talk about our issues because of the fact that certain topics, like talking about pro-white issues, or even in the case of what you do, talking about, you know, things that the Jewish community does to take care of their own, have been made forbidden. And I think we really need to bring sunlight onto issues so we can increase knowledge.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's repressed knowledge. On the show that David Duke had today with Paul Neelan, who's running for Congress, as you know, against Paul Ryan in Wisconsin, Paul Neelan was talking about his experience of just 2 years ago or so, when somebody that he was at the time, I guess maybe it was 3 years ago, he was trying to get, you know, promote Donald Trump's campaign, and one of his co-workers pointed out the role of Jews in, or the, you know, organized Jewry in the 1965 Immigration Act and in promoting mass immigration to the United States. And Paul Neelan, coming from, you know, a traditional conservative evangelical background, just he couldn't fathom what this person was saying. The person wound up recommending Culture of Critique by Kevin MacDonald. Paul Neelan read maybe the first 10 pages or so and thought, this is just bizarre, put it aside. But then later on picked it up again and read further into it. And there, you know, all of a sudden, there's when you're confronted with that much evidence, it's eye-opening. But yeah, part of the problem is that, you know, we are conditioned to, is it conditioning? We are deprived from so much basic information that we can't even open our eyes to the truth all at once. We have to take baby steps towards it. Is that what you find?
Well, not just that. I mean, I definitely agree with that. But I find that once people get woke to some of these larger issues, they're so angry and frustrated at the scope of what's been done to take away, you know, basically control of our own civilization from us, that they find it difficult to talk about anything else. And, you know, that's the challenge for anyone like Paul or, you know, myself, who was involved in the realm of politics, that you have a greater awareness of certain issues that are ongoing than people's knowledge of what's out there. And so the challenge for those of us who are out there in the public space, and I would include the media and people like yourself in this as well, is how do we put together a message that reaches the people who should be natural allies, you know, and that's the conservatives, the Christians, a lot of the libertarians, your white nationalists, the alt-right, because at the end of the day, we're all on the same hit list. Mm-hmm. And right now, a lot of groups, I find, have a tendency to, because they're not successful, they take comfort in knowing that they're right, and they seek a sort of ideological perfection that I think is not necessarily as helpful, because there's a lot of really good people who spend too much time arguing with one another because they have slight differences of opinion. But at the end of the day, they want 95% of the same things. And so my frustration isn't so much with the rank and file people, because they don't know, but that the leaders who are out there haven't found ways to get together to put our messages out there in a way where you know, the message we're putting out there, which is a traditional American message in line with the founders, you know, understanding, you know, we are Western civilization built on positive white identity and not allowing usury to run our system, is one that most people would support with just different branding. And I just get so frustrated because I feel like we're always playing to the tune of those who do not seek our best interest. You know what, all too well how easily they make us do that against one another. And we need to stop letting them play divide and conquer against us and find ways to be more effective working together. And, you know, that's what I'm working on now, trying to network with people who have these different viewpoints and put together something that's stronger and more vigorous where, you know, as an identity, we go out there and say, look, you're not going to just bring in people from everywhere. We're going to look at Hart Celler again, and we're going to revisit immigration. We're going to stop amnesty. We're going to stop giving citizenship to anyone. I mean, it's a privilege to be a citizen, not something that we should just hand out for free like we've done for so long. But it doesn't change until we have clout as a group. And, you know, our blessing is our curse. We have intelligent, brilliant people, great thinkers, and they like to argue because they're great thinkers. You know, we need to learn a little bit from the left and what they've done so well, and that's work as, you know, a team. And we have an awesome team if we can just get all the superstars to check their egos at the door. And, you know, I'm no superstar, but maybe I can make people talk to one another, and that's what I try to do.
Oh, so you probably heard me typing in the background. You made a lot of good points that I wanted to make sure I could address. You make the point that people are angry once they're awakened, and they are. And I experienced that once. And, of course, it was – you know, the awakening didn't all happen at once, but I remember in the early 1990s realizing that half of my professors were Jewish, and the ones who were Jewish were much, much more likely to assign authors, you know, force us to read authors who were Jewish. I mean, they, you know, the half the Jews, and they would two-thirds or three-fourths of the people that they would assign for reading would be Jewish. I saw these things, and it made me angry. And that, you know, the anger to the extent that it can motivate you to action is good, but then again, is it going to motivate you to the most constructive action? And that's a challenge. You say, you know, people get so angry they can't talk about anything else, and I know that. You know, I was talking last night to a friend of mine who I hadn't spoken to in a few years, and wouldn't you know it, I wind up going on a 20-minute monologue about these issues. One last thing I want to mention, and see if you think see it the same way. You mentioned a long list of people who are natural allies. I'm going to throw out not the most obvious allies. How about the Bernie Bros? The Bernie Bros, who were interested in national health insurance or free tuition, low tuition for qualified students. If they understood why we have never had and why we are not going to be able to get national health insurance and free tuition, because, you know, we don't have a high trust society anymore, because you know, a lot of the types of programs that they would like, and that, frankly, right-wing nationalist governments in the 20th century implemented, governments that actually liked their own people implemented programs like this. But now these same programs would be used against us. They're used as, you know, wealth redistribution mechanisms. That some, even, you know, not that Bernie Sanders would ever be our ally, but even Bernie Sanders was not pro-immigration until much more recently. And even when he was running for president, he was attacked for that. Okay, we'll be back after the break.
Okay.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com. Educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website. The patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
And we are back, and I had taken my eye off the clock before the break, and I think I talked into the break. So I was just saying that, you know, a lot of these Bernie bros could also be people that we could get on board if we could get them to understand that the reason that we can't have national health insurance or low cost or free tuition for qualified students, the way many nationalist European governments implemented in the last century, is because we've got massive immigration, and that these programs are now weaponized in order to be wealth transfer mechanisms. What do you think of that, Tom?
Well, I think you're right about it from the policy level, but I wouldn't argue it that way. I would argue it the way sort of the left would, which is hardcore identity politics. And what I mean by that is this. If you look at the 2016 Democratic primaries by race, and you look who white people voted for, you would see that Bernie Sanders was their candidate. Mm-hmm. Hillary racked up her victories in black caucuses in places like South Carolina and places where Democrats never win elections, but they count for caucus votes. And what the people who want this socialized system are going to have to make a choice about. And I know Vermont very well. I used to live not 10 miles from there. And Burlington's a great city. It's a very nice place to visit, in spite of what people might expect. Is they have to realize that if they're going to go ahead and make this party all about diversity and about going ahead and giving things to get minority votes, that they're going to never get what they want. Because at the end of the day, someone's got to be at the back of the bus. I mean, that's the way it is in politics. There are winners and losers. And the whole premise of the Democratic Party at this point is that they are a party of identities, you know, of minorities, blacks, Latinos, LGBTQ, Muslims, all these different groups and these combined groups, and there's not going to be any space for the traditional white liberal. And, you know, I don't know if this fits your experience of the alt-right, but a lot of people who I know are people who've left, you know, who were once Democrats, who said, okay, you know, we still think government should be involved in people's lives and be helpful, but it never helps our people. And I think we should be very clear about that, because I think a great opportunity is going to come up in 2020. The Democrats are going to learn the lesson from 2016 that Obama's winning coalition doesn't happen with a white person at the top of the ticket. Bernie's going to run again, or some other progressive of his ilk, and he's going to lose again in the exact same way for the exact same reasons. And that's when those people are going to be angry, they're going to be hurt, and they're going to be listening. And we need to be ready and organized to say to them, look, we want to listen to your ideas. We want a society where you're at the table, where you're not at the back. But in order for them to do that, and in order for us to do that, we have to be willing to put white identity at the heart of what we do, because realistically, that's the only force powerful enough to oppose what the Democrats have been doing. Trump showed it, and even though he's been willing to take it halfway, the farther we take it, the quicker we get back to taking back our country.
Right. And in order to take it farther, we have to come up with a narrative that's going to be acceptable to people. Sure. Because, you know, it's what the alt-right has done has been great for young people, because young people have been so desensitized due to video games, due to podcasts, where every where what I call the shuck fit to sentence ratio. And, you know, shuck fit are those two words, and you can kind of transpose the sounds and you'll know what I'm talking about. But every sentence you got, they're having these shuck fits, and they've been so desensitized to language and to coarse ideas and to violence in video games and everything, that they can just joke about ovens and whatnot, and that's fine for them. I'm not countersigning.
But it won't get your people from 40 to 70 years old to vote.
No, and those are the people who vote.
To doing that, though, is this. You know, the left overplays their hand terribly. Anyone who goes out and speaks in favor of traditional American values or Western civilization is called a racist, a Nazi, and a bigot. So if we're going to be claimed all those things, we should make very clear on our sleeves, we are not only the white people, but we are the Christians. We are the decent people. We are the people, you know, who believe in our country, who believe in our flag, who support law enforcement, who support the troops. And every time we go out there with simple messages like the It's Okay to Be White campaign was incredibly effective, because the way people learn to dislike the left and the way they learn that we're right is to see the contradictions. When you go out there and you just assert that you as a human being have equal rights and then say, no, you don't, because you're white and you're evil and you're the other, that's how you win. And you know, we spend a lot of time and energy trying to figure out the perfect right message for us, but I don't think it's as important as people think. I think it matters more that we just go out there and be who we've always been. Say we are what the founders intended, and let them attack us. And, you know, they count on us being afraid. They count on us not being willing to go out there because they threaten us, right? They take away our jobs. They harass us at work. They do all these different things. And we can stand up against that. And we need institutions to do it, because, frankly, we've done a terrible job because we're decent and we've had guilt. And there's a lot of different reasons. And, you know, you've covered many of them. And as people learn more, they get more angry about it. But that's what we need to fight.
That's what we need to fight. Okay, well, we'll talk about that more after we get back from the break.
Yes, sir.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to aroutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AirOutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
To the show. So, Tom, we were just talking about, well, there's things that need to be done. And I know you've been thinking about what needs to be done. What are you up to?
Oh, thanks for asking that, Patrick. What I'm working on now is I'm writing a book that's designed to kind of put my own experiences in a context that's useful for more people. And specifically, I'm spending a lot of time writing about the 20th century and talking about how we got to a point where up is down. You know, I think a lot of people wonder, you know, why we got away from a position where we believed in our traditional values, like men and women getting married and, you know, having America be for the people who founded it and all those things. And it didn't happen overnight. And I know a lot of people struggle to make these cases to, normies who aren't yet aware. So really what I'm working to do right now is to put together a book over the next month or two that really covers that in a way where it's kind of light, but it's also brings up some big issues, you know, like in the 1910s, how government was encouraged to grow. I just wrote a chapter about the Federal Reserve, actually, you know, and why you would give over power to the bankers. Because if you think about it, even today, how much of what we do is run on the, the tune of what they whistle. So I'm working on that. And then beyond that, what I'm going to continue working on is trying to figure out how to build a national organization to foster positive white identity. And I've been talking with a lot of different people and a lot of groups out there. And there's some really good ideas that are out there, but right now there hasn't been the organization. So that's going to probably be my bigger project. So as I was up here talking to my good friends up here in New Albion, up here in New England, and New England's a wonderful place, very homogeneous and safe. But because of that, people aren't aware of the risks and threats that exist elsewhere. And so in order to actually help preserve what I care about where I live, I'm going to have to go down south a little bit and talk to some other people and work together within the nation.
You were you never broke up. We never lost you, but your volume did kind of drop off a little bit. So I'm just giving you a little bit of feedback on that. But we heard everything.
All right. I apologize for that. Let me see if this will help.
Now, what do you think about the idea of a third party, a new political party, or some sort of electoral alliance between various third parties or movements within, say, the Republican Party? Do you think there's an electoral strategy that we should be thinking about?
Yeah, I do. I go back and forth between thinking that a third party's helpful, but I've worked with third parties and that doesn't work so well, and having an organization that shapes parties. You know, you look at the power of a group like the NAACP as an example of how you could maybe manipulate power. And if you had a group where, you know, you had people who were whites who said, these are issues we care about, and just make certain key simple issues like immigration, have a scorecard and hold people's feet to the fire, I think it would be incredibly effective. Because the one thing we have seen is you can win primaries, and, you know, we can push the Republican Party in the direction it needs to go. And if the Republican Party, you know, tries to go back to its old pre-Trumpian ways of not being nationalists but being globalists who go ahead and just, you know, support what the Chamber of Commerce wants, then we should run third-party people against them. And I think it does more good for the movement, honestly, to have, you know, a Democrat win than a Republican who's only going to undercut everything we're about. I know people might disagree with that, but I think the time is coming where we have to play hardball, because everyone thinks, you know, we can do things nicely with compromise and all that. But realistically, the population numbers don't lie, and we're a generation away from being a minority. And at that point, then there will be no political solutions open to us through the ballot box.
Generation away from being a minority. Now, of course, you've got somebody like, say, Rick Sanchez. You have somebody like, who's another good example? Acosta. What's the guy's name on CNN? Something Acosta.
Jim Acosta.
Jim Acosta. These people who are completely white, yet they still, to some level, especially Jim Acosta, still identify strongly as Hispanics. And, you know, and you wonder why somebody, and you know, you have Mexicans. A lot of the Mexicans who lived in the Southwest at the time of the Mexican-American War. I mean, there was never any ethnic cleansing. You know,
sure.
Whoever lived here in New Mexico or Colorado, they didn't get pushed out. And those Mexicans were mostly whites.
Right.
And why, you know, why is it that they are more likely, I assume they're more likely to identify with, you know, Guatemalan immigrants than with white people? I think that is because of the conditioning of the media and the public school system and whatnot. But,
well, I think the best evidence you have for your own thesis is look at how race is treated in Mexico and places like that, where there's a definite hierarchy based upon appearance, and where you would want to be, you know, if you can trace your roots to Castile or Aragon, you're doing pretty well over there in Mexico, even to today. And I think, like you said, now a lot of the pressure is why people identify the way they do is because there's an onus in being white. I mean, you're a cuck. You're someone who's, you know, guilty, who's responsible for things. And if we begin shifting that identity, I think it will be amazing to see how quickly different groups will try to approach that identity. And the important thing is to identify ourselves in a way where we're not just talking about ourselves as color, but as a set of ideas, because race is much more than skin deep, as we all understand. And there are specific contributions, you know, like the ones the founders gave that I would attribute to white civilization that we should defend as our own. And the fact that the progressive left, you know, and their coalition to the ascendant, which is basically a hodgepodge of minorities, takes basically the opposite position, trying to radically remake society with redistribution instead of merit, and, you know, handouts instead of actually working for things, makes it incredibly easy. And as we do that, we will draw more people in, including some minorities of goodwill who may very well realize that the American dream isn't going to happen if you continually take from one group and give to another. That's just not the way things work around here.
You know, you've had immigration in the United States in the past. This, I think right now we are at record level of foreign-born in by the way, we're getting a little bit of wind or something from
Yeah, I apologize for that. I'm adapting to make this work, but I'm sorry about that.
And we appreciate your coming on the show. But, you know, if you were to go back 100 years or so, that was probably another period where you had pretty high levels of foreign-born. And they were mostly from Europe. But you had some you had Armenians. You had Lebanese or Syrian Christians, people who, you know, technically their homelands might not have really been, they were on the Asian continent, not in the European continent, yet they wanted to identify as white, and they have. I mean, people look at Ralph Nader, and nobody says Ralph Nader's not white, but he's Lebanese. And people look at, well, maybe I'm dating myself a little bit, George Duke Magian, who was the governor of California for 8 years, and nobody said he wasn't white. He was Armenian. And, of course, now there's so much pressure not to be white. And if you want to get into a college, if you're applying for a job, you always – if you can identify as anything other than white or a straight white male, you're going to want to do that.
Right. Well, that's just it. I mean, and even, you know, if we go back to 100 years ago, a Slav like me wouldn't have been white, right? It would have been a WASP. But, I mean, white, just like all identities are somewhat aspirational and somewhat genetic. And the point is, we can create an identity that will be open to different people, that can accomplish a great many things. And the more people who adopt it, the more peaceful things will be. But the important thing is having a group of people who have faith with one another and who stand up for a core of ideas at the root of what, you know, America has been about. And if we do that, then the definitions will matter far less, because at this point, you know, we're coming to a point where we have to choose a side, and this cultural civil war, and that's what I call it, is accelerating. And so what we need to do is organize ourselves, and there's plenty of room for understanding, in my opinion, for people of good character who want to be involved. I know other people are more demanding in that. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's necessarily helpful. I've always been a fan of the 90% solution. As someone who is involved in policy and politics, I understand if you can get to the point where you're getting 90% of what you want, you're doing fantastic. And, you know, the reason I think we've had these purity cycles is because we haven't been very successful for a long time. But the goal has to be to change that, to grow it, and to grow, you know, you have to make compromises. And if, you know, that requires a certain degree of understanding, so long as it works to the point where, you know, the people, the right people are being rewarded and we start bringing in the right people or bringing in no more people, I'm okay with that. And I think that's kind of where it needs to go. And I think a lot of Americans would understand that. I mean, even immigrants, you know, a lot of times it's easy to poke fun at immigrants, but they understand what a shithole looks like. They understand where, you know, countries go bad, and they got out of there. So they're not going to want what they had there here in America. And for better or worse, if we're really blunt and honest about it, self-rule hasn't worked out so great in Latin America or Africa or throughout the third world. So, you know, we need to be very forthright about saying, you know, a certain group of people had a certain set of ideas to run this, and you can't just have those ideas work without the sort of engineers who know how to run the system. And that's people who come from, you know, that European background and that Western heritage.
Yeah, you know, at some level, people who came here, a lot of people who came here, recent immigrants, and when I say recent, I mean post-1965, came here because they, not just for the Gibbs. There's some of that, you know, not just for the economic opportunity, but because they liked America. And the there used to be a meme for the immigrant that we're in America now. We have to speak English. We have, you know, the parent might be talking to the child or something, but, you know, we're Americans now. And so let's actively assimilate. And now, who is the guy on? There's a black guy on CNN, a comedy guy. I forgot what his name was. Something Bell, Jamal Bell, or something like that. And he says assimilation is a four-letter word. right? That these people, they developed their cultures over thousands of years and they got them right. Why would we want to why would we want them to change it now? And of course, if they had it right, why did they leave their culture? That's the obvious question. But it's a question, even such a stupid statement as this Jamal Bell, if that was his name, something Bell, Kamal, it begins with a K, Camille Bell, something like that. Such a stupid statement goes unchallenged nowadays.
Well, it's because we have lost faith in our culture. You know, the crisis of Western civilization is we don't stand up for our culture. I mean, if you look at the history of the 20th century, you could look at the two world wars as the great civil war of white civilization, where we didn't really resolve anything, but we killed a bunch of our own, and we decided we didn't have the right to exist. We just decided we would have comfortable materialist living. I mean, that's what Europe has done, and that's why they've been utterly unable to prevent, you know, Islam from overtaking many of their cities and countries. And they just don't believe in anything, and it's a crisis of faith and a lack of vision. And, you know, when you look at the immigrants in previous generations, or even in 1965, you know, there was an American culture still, and the left has worked to destroy that, to say that our traditional culture is terrible, and any other culture is equally valid. I mean, it's an attack on the idea of right and wrong, and it's an attack on the idea that quality exists. I mean, they make everything into some quantitative measurement, right? Or you say, oh, we can't pass judgments. But if you can't pass judgments and have a sense of right or wrong and what is actually good or bad, how are you supposed to have any development in your society? And we don't. We have forced equality, where the only equality that's ever existed is coming into being, that of the lowest common denominator. You know, high culture is giving way to pop culture, where we basically glorify sex, drugs, and feeling good. And whatever thing you have to do to take care of yourself to get there is completely permissible. And to our detriment, I think the majority has gone along with it because why wouldn't they? I mean, it feels good and no one has to feel bad about anything. But someone at some point has to be the adult in the room and step up and say, you know, look, we need to fight for something. We need to actually believe in something. Because if you have a multicultural society and it's also multi-ethnic, there have been exactly zero times in history that stood for more than a generation or two, because in the absence of a commanding culture or a state that forces authority, those can't hold together. And I can't help but think the plan here is to try to have that sort of totalitarian state where there's an elite who runs things, who are well-educated, and who practice the sort of things they say we shouldn't practice, you know? They take care of their families. They take care of their own. I know that you're a big critic of how that happens in the Jewish world, but what I would say is it's too bad we don't do more of that in our own world, where we don't take care of our own. You know, we just look past it, instead say it's every man for ourselves and we're fighting for ideas. We need to be fighting for each other. And until we change that, we're not getting our culture back, because they own the media, they own academia, and all we have left is what we look like. And that's what we have to fight on now, because it's all that's left to us.
As for the Jewish community, they, on the one hand, are the most organized and pursue with the greatest determination their own group interests, and yet and promote organization and pursuit of group interests for non-whites, and yet more than anyone else try to repress the ability of whites to do likewise. And so there's the whole hypocrisy thing there. So you talk about,
that's what we need to do, though, call them out on their hypocrisy. And all of these groups at the heart of their thinking have this idea that they blame us for being evil. And every time they're forced to admit that, that's one more person who's going to wake up and say, how can I support people who think I'm evil? And we need people to ask that question.
Yeah, well, they keep pushing it farther and farther. And one of the slogans that has emerged in the whole Black Lives Matter demonstration stuff is white silence equals white violence, right? Mm-hmm. And a public school teacher, I was talking to a public school student, a white girl, and she told me that just last week, one of her teachers, a female teacher, said that if somebody uses a racial slur, or she didn't even say racial slur, just a slur, that it's okay to punch that person in the face. All right? So you can use violence against words, which, of course, you know, in the world of martial arts, I mean, this girl had been training martial arts since she was a toddler, probably, and it goes contrary to everything that she's ever been taught.
But think about it. But this is really interesting, right? So people are being taught to act that way. What's going to be the outcome of whole generations who are being educated, indoctrinated with this belief? I mean, what's going to happen if we stand up and try to use words to defend ourselves and say, look, we just want to be treated equal. We're going to get punched in the nose.
Like Richard Spencer. Okay, we will be back after the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
And welcome back to the show. Welcome back. During the break, I was talking to Tom, and he was saying something really, really interesting, and then we got disconnected. Mr. T's trying to bring him back, and maybe we'll get him back, and maybe I'll just have to invite him on another time. But he's very interesting. He's somebody who's working hard. He's writing a book. And looking into political organization, whether that's third party or a functioning advocacy group. And we certainly need advocacy. And, you know, it's difficult. And advocacy is not necessarily one size fits all. We might need to have multiple groups. And, you know, we were talking earlier about the success of some of the younger alt-right in reaching younger people, which is great. And I'm not going to criticize them for that. And they're using their part of our culture, their subculture, which includes a lot of shuck fits and a lot of over-the-top memes and whatnot. And if that's how they communicate amongst each other, amongst themselves, that's fine. We need to develop something that is going to be appealing to older people, people of a different generation, or people of who are less desensitized to a lot of this language. It's difficult, and that's what we're working on. And you know, we need to develop narratives. Then the way those narratives get out, I mean, it can be through media like RBN. By the way, if you haven't done so far, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button and help support this network. It can be through publications like the books that we write, where you can really develop narratives and provide the backing for them. But then also you need organizations that don't just develop a narrative that's sitting out there passively, but that is actively projecting it into the debate. And you know, this is what organizations do. They go out and they bring the narrative to the people. And so that's important also. And you know, this is a big job. It's not one size fits all. There's no reason to expect that everything's going to fall under one umbrella and one leadership. But if we're going to have multiple organizations, we want to make sure we're not working at cross purposes, which sometimes maybe means having a thick skin. I, on a previous show, complained a little bit about the anti-boomerism, but I tried to do it in such a way as not to harshly criticize or question the motives of the people who engage in it, because they're important people. And I think to an extent we need to have thick skin, and I'm willing to have some thick skin and put up with some things. And you know, there are narratives that are effective with certain groups that we need to get on board, yet might be a little bit abrasive to our ears. And I think sometimes we have to have a thick skin and just accept that. Well, we will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. And I will get Tom Kaczynski back on as soon as I can also. And in the meantime, stay tuned to RBN for more great shows. So next time.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.